Welcome to the School of Hollywood. Hey, this is Steve Owens, and I'm your host, a 30-year veteran in Hollywood, just a few years. And today, we're very lucky to have Gabrielle Evans. She is a casting director that has done 40-plus movies. Plus, now she's a producer. You never know. You might end up on one of her movies. Stay tuned on the School of Hollywood for her journey and story. Hi, it's Steve Owens. Today on School of Hollywood, we have Gabrielle Evans Fields, and she has been a casting director in Los Angeles for many years and now a film producer and executive producer. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much, Steve.
Well, you've cast over 40 films, and that's a lot in Hollywood. And most of them have been independent, and you've had a great career in that. And now you move on to being a producer. Tell us where you started and how you evolved into becoming a producer.
Well, thank you so much. I was living in New York during the 9/11, and right after 9/11 happened, I moved back home in the spring of 2002. And I was like, wow, what am I going to do here? Kind of just restart, you know, my career, I guess, or whatever it was. Because I did some assistant casting in New York. So what I decided to do was just start on my own. And I did a tiny, tiny short film. I believe it's called Matthew 28:13, somewhere around there in the scripture. And it was really unique. You know, at the time, Craigslist was going on and we did breakdown services and all that. So that was pretty much over almost 20 years ago. So from there, I just started, you know, I just loved the independent world because it gave actors a chance to either get their first film or their second film or some actors that have been in films. And I love that part. I love discovery.
That's a rarity too, by the way, these days.
Well, yeah, because, you know, when you start off, you're like, okay, I'm a casting director, you know, I'm not going to go to Universal and start casting this big motion picture. But what I said is, well, I'm going to start with actors and I'm going to start with discovering in their talents and just being in the room with no pressure, and, you know, to do it. And a couple of times I was asked to do, you know, CW shows and all that. And at the time I was like, well, we know how network casting goes. You know, it could be a casting director, but of course we call it up the chute, you know, it goes all the way upstairs to the network. And they're the ones that really work at tapes and things like that. So we just become an organizer. And I just wanted a little bit more. I really wanted to work with their actors and give them a chance to be in a film and just really discover those amazing talents. So that's why I did not do a series. And I think that's the casting directors that do that are wonderful. It just wasn't for me because I wanted more to get into the organic type of actors to in a feature film and what that would mean to them. And I'm a big film buff. I love television, but at that time when I started, I loved films. So that was my reason. It's just kind of discovering those little rocks and gems.
And then you made the transition into producing. How did that come about?
Yeah, that was crazy. That was, of course, just, it's never just, hey, I want to start as producer. What I was finding out was whenever we would cast an independent film, it would, no sooner was the talent on set and they were calling me or emailing me or texting me saying, Gabrielle, is there any way you could talk to the producer? You know, there's, you know, we're having kind of this problem or that problem, or they just needed this outside voice. And all that, even the directors of the film would be calling me after a day one of shooting. And I want to mention this film because this is where the transition became. It's when I was right after I cast the film Windsor, it was the director was calling me every day and giving me this sort of, you know, hey, this person performed great, or, you know, and here I was in LA and they shot this film in Texas. So this director was calling me like I was his producing partner. And he was like, okay, day one was really good. We shot the pages. We did this actor. And he leaned on me a lot. And I was like, well, how's your local casting? He goes, well, you know, she put a lot of people on tape, but, you know, I need someone to handle the entire legal paperwork, everything. So I remember on a Saturday, 10 days before they were shooting, I was on the phone dealing points with these actors. And as you know, casting directors, we don't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, we do the deal memo and we send it over, but when it starts getting into the long forms and all that, so I was basically on the phone in the entire weekend with like 14 long forms. And after the film was wrapped, you know, I emailed him and I said, well, you know, that was pretty much a lot of producing things. And so where do we go from here? What's the edit going to look like? What's the first assembly going to look like? Because I was around producers at that time. And I just said, you know, my next film, I promise I am absolutely producing, because it really gave a voice to how the vision of the film comes out. And then that's after that film, I decided to produce. And boy, oh boy, what a transition.
I know. I know the transition. Believe me, I've been obviously management for many years, and now making that transition into film. I did some television producing for actually about 6 years, but feature film is it's a big ball game. And you started a company called Silver Lining.
Yes.
How long ago was that?
Yeah, I started Silver Lining around, we're going on our, believer, it'll be 10 years in May. And the thing about Silver Lining Pictures Company is that I always had to see at the end of the day, I know it sounds cliche, but everything, even now, we have to look for that silver lining. We have to. You know, producers are problem solvers, babysitters, co-financiers. You know, we're husbands, we're wives, we're casting directors, we're psychologists for every key, as you know.
Yep.
And that takes a toll on you. So what I always tell myself is, where's the silver lining in this? We already know the problem. Let's find a solution. Because as you know, as a producer, you have to find a solution. And with that being said, I have to always find the silver lining. Even when something goes completely wrong, where I have to say, well, this is the good that came out of it. That's where I got the name. I added a motion picture company to the end of our company because I'm a big fan of Robert Evans. And he mentored me a little bit through the Illicit Profit. And, you know, there's times where I would be pulling my hair and I'll be calling Melissa, who was his second, third person down in the company. Mm-hmm. And his name was called Robert Evans Emotion Picture Company. So after he died, I was like, well, we just want to continue that. But, you know, I read all of his books and he just sort of mentored me by saying, don't have a director, writer, producer on the same film, because, you know, you're not going to be able to shift that, keep that director on directing. They don't have time to look at budgets and things like that. So he did a lot for me. So that's why I added company, a motion picture company. So anyway, that's where the name came up, Silver Lining Pictures.
And it's also a family oriented in it as well, which is great.
It is. Yeah, I mean, it is. It's one of those things. And this is why we enter Magic Maps. In 2008, I had got the script and it was so hilarious. It was so funny. And the thing about this writer is from Detroit, and he had sent me something. He said, hey, I'd love for you guys to do this. And we've had this for 2008, and we were living by the beach at the time. And, you know, my husband's a big fan of comedy. He comes from, you know, the Pink Panther world. He loves all that humor and things. And he read the script. He said, wow, this is so great. So in 2008, we tried to produce Magic Maps. When I say tried, I mean, I put a producer on and then we try to finance it. And we're like, well, there's really no names. We at one time went out to Paul Rudd. He liked it, but he wanted to work on it for 4 or 5 years. And so I just sort of, you know, as you know, it just sort of fizzled out and we mm-hmm. kind of put it on the shelf. Well, once we moved from the South Bay over to a new house, I was like, well, you know, let's see if I can get Magic Max up. And it worked this time. The thing is like, well, who can direct, who can do this? And when you know someone's had this script for, you know, 8 or 9 years, and this is something my husband's always wanted to do. He's always wanted to direct. And never once did I say, okay, every film you're going to do this. It took a long time. It was like, really? You kind of want to do this? Can you do it? And of course, you know, we just got our UPM and myself and another producer. So of course he can. And this is where we're at.
And speaking of the UPM on this project, I was like, why do I know this film? It's because Randy Turow, who was your UPM and Lion producer, actually is a guy who originally gave me my big break as a music supervisor in Hollywood on an Adam Sandler movie.
See, Randy Turow is awesome. He's absolutely awesome. Let me rewind a little bit, because that whole Adam Sandler thingy, when I heard of Randy Turow, I was like, he did The Longest Shark, right? And so I was like, wow, you know, this is a guy I really love to work with him somehow, some way. So there's this project called Jiu-Jitsu. Totally great film, kids film, hysterical. Mm-hmm. And I kept saying, wow, I would love to work with Randy Turow. So when we did Magic Max, my producing partner, Sean Fernand, said, hey, Randy Turow would be perfect. So as soon as I heard his name, I absolutely said yes. And from there, I was like, well, I want you to know this is a first-time director. He said, not a problem. When he met Jim, when we all met together, it was, I mean, without sounding corny, it was magic. I love Randy Turow. He's the best. He brought his Dan Neese, our cinematographer. He brought all of our keys. He's just the best.
And that's...
don't want to shoot a film without him.
That's what I've told several people. And actually, he brought me on as an exec on a film 2 summers ago, working with him. And he's great. And I actually spoke to him actually today, and been a great mentor for me in Hollywood for over the years, and having been also an agent as well at ICM and whatnot. So boost him up here.
Yeah, he knows how to get it done. And, you know, this Magic Max was not easy. This is a budget that should have been a lot more than what we did. But we were able, because of Randy's beautiful old school and just him knowing people, knowing how to make a film, it was him that brought in a lot of our key players, you know, those key positions who worked on huge films. And he would call them up and say, hey, can you be a gaffer for here? Can you do this? Can you do that? And it was amazing. And if it wasn't for him, this film wouldn't look the way that it does.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at the cast and crew, they've done like movies from Spider-Man, Taken, Star Trek, yeah. Ford versus Ferrari. You had an amazing crew. And then I saw that you had Philip Tan, who's one of the best as far as in stunt fighting in there too.
Philip Tan is the best. He's the best. He... And again, another one of those guys who he was already on when we had this film, Jiu-Jitsu, this project, I should say, in development, Jiu-Jitsu. He had ICM, and at the time, Jack Gilardi,
yep,
may rest in peace, called me up and he said, Gabrielle, I've got this amazing kid, Louis Tan. You have to meet him. And I remember Louis Tan coming into my Beverly Hills office at the time. I was over at, I think, 468. And he came over and I was like, wow, this kid, you know, this is this kid should be the biggest movie star in the world. He looked, remind me a little bit of Bruce Lee. He was tall. He's so handsome. And so Louis told me, I really want to do this movie. So we closed the deal with ICM. Louis Tan was on. We went out and got financing.
Mm-hmm.
And Louis Tan says, whatever you do, my dad cannot do the stunts. And we're like, what does that even mean? We went home the other day after the meeting. We went home and he was kidding, but we were, you know, me and Mark Kramer, who's my producing partner, went home and said, wow, why did he say it? Could this be Philip Tan's son? Of course it was Philip Tan. We're like, oh my God, we love Philip Tan. So we called Lewis. We said, we cannot promise you that we're not going to use your dad because he's freaking epic. So when Magic Max came, Randy Turow says Philip Tan, I'm like, oh my gosh, yes. So of course he did everything. He did our opening sequence. There's a point where Max goes back and goes, he visits his park the first time and he's falling and clumsy and gets hit by a kid and tangles up in a jump rope. And then of course, when Max gets his life together, he goes back to the park and it's a smooth transition. And Philip Tan was the best. We love him.
Well, tell us, everybody, about the plot of the movie. Now it's got some cred, so now let's talk about the stars, who's starring in the movie, and the plot line.
Thank you so much. When we, of course, got Magic Max, when we was a go picture, we said, well, most important thing is going to be this kid. Who is going to be this kid? And at that time, of course, it's almost, will be 3 years in spring. I was like, you know, I love television. This is what we do. And we, you know, I had saw the show, This Is Us. And I was like, wow, that kid is so cute. He's so amazing. I was like, wow, you know, it's pretty good. So never did I think he was going to be in my presence, you know, actually carrying this film. But, you know, one can dream, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, hey, you know, Parker Bates. So when we put the breakdown, of course, Parker Bates. I'm like, wow, okay. So we set up the costume. We had it in Burbank. And there was this other kid that I really liked. He was on Fuller House or something. He was amazing. He comes in. Well, Parker's set for 4:00, and this other kid had come in at 2:00. And I had told the director, I said, you're going to love this kid on Fuller House. He is really, really good. And of course, he comes in. He just blows everybody away. And we're like, in my heart, I'm like, that's it. I kept looking at my casting sheet, and I circled Parker Bates. And it was 4:00. And it was 4:20, 4:30, 4:45. I was like, wow, this kid's not going to come in. So all of a sudden the agent calls me and he says, he's on his way or he's outside. And I'm like, oh, okay. So we had to put the cameras up again, you know, and he comes mm-hmm. walking in. And of course, you know, I have my chow chow dog in the room. Her name's Maddie. Just laying in the corner, and Parker just comes in and starts talking to Maddie, and him and Jim get along. It was just like, wow, you know, and then he just comes out and just does this scene of Max. And we were like, okay, Jim looked at me and he goes, that's why you circled him, huh? I said, this is our kid. Automatically, this is it. And he walked out, and then I later heard when I call him up to tell him that the director liked him and here's the start date and all that. He goes, you knew, I knew I had this part the minute I read the script. I knew that it was mine. I'm like, okay, you go, Parker. So, him and Jim just hit it off. And then you got Ivan, who at the time we had another actor attached and then due to scheduling, whatever. So Ivan comes walking in. We're like, oh my gosh, that's Max. Well, Ivan and Tim hit it off. It was the director, Parker, and Ivan. And then, of course, you have Lotus Blossom, who is amazing. Just all hit it off. We knew that we had magic in the room. We knew that the cast formed automatically. The chemistry between Ivan and Tim, or Ivan and Parker, I'm sorry, the rehearsals were unbelievable to watch because it was just so natural. And I love when that happens.
Just watching the trailer on it, you could see the chemistry in every scene that the two of them were having together. It was like they were actually father and son in real life in the movie.
Oh, 100%. And it was, you know, 15, 16 day shoot, and we shot the film in Simi Valley, and for them to just collaborate the way they did in the chemistry was amazing. And that was the most important thing. And I mean, Ivan is just, he reminds me of a young James Gardner.
Ivan Sergei, yes.
Ivan Sergei, such a talented guy. When his agency approached me and said, hey, you know, I know you're looking for, you know, this actor to play Max, because I'd made some phone calls and said, well, other actor can't do it, blah, blah, blah. And he was in a movie with Ron Howard's dad, the last film of Ron Howard's dad. It was really nice. And I was like, wow, he's really, really good. And then to meet him in person, as soon as he walked in, and this is what I try to tell actors, because the casting director comes back, that part of my brain comes back. Whether you're walking in a cafe or walking in a casting room, you just know that is your actor. You just know it. I can't describe it. It's something of energy. It's something about something in their eyes, just something. And I just nudged the director. I said, here's your maps. Here's maps. And he was like, really? I go, yeah. Just trust me on this one. And of course he did. And, you know, I didn't have to audition, but we had saw tapes of him. I said, there's your Max. And I love when that happens. That's when you know you have the gift, because you're like, oh, no, not him, the other one. So he was amazing, and he was really good with Jim. You know, he would always, every day on set, he would come up and say, hey, what about this line or that line? And, you know, the director was really cool to the cast because he let them play. So a lot of stuff, you know, that they were able to play and wiggle room and stuff. But chemistry is everything.
When you're casting kids, do you expect them to be off book, or do you want them to have some fun in the room and ad lib on the sides, or how do you feel with kids?
Yeah, with kids, I think as long as I've been casting, I have told the adult actors, I said, there's kids 6, 7 years old that come in off book. And we don't even ask them to. We don't even expect them to. They just do. So they're always so prepared. So when someone's not off book, I'm like, wow, you know, kids are always off book. I don't expect them to be off book, but I would prefer them to be in the more in the moment than to really like, okay, let's hold on to every word. Because I just think that when the director works with actors anyway, they always come up with something different. So I really kind of don't say, well, you have to be exact or something. Mm-hmm. I'd rather them be in the moment versus, you know, every verbatim. So that's how I am with kids.
How would you feel about them actually doing slates where they put a little of their personality into it instead of just, you know, hi, I'm Steve Owens with William Morris, right, kind of a thing?
Oh, yeah. No, I just, the most important thing I think for actors, regardless of who their age, is just be yourself, because we're going to see that character. The director's going to see something, go, you know what? That's who I've imagined. That's the tone I've heard. That's what I'm hearing. That's what I've heard in my head. And it's always just be yourself, but understand being to that character, but just be yourself at the end of the day. You have to be yourself, because that is what's going to pull off you to be this actor. You know, those are the actor's words, but most importantly, always slay. Always have fun with slating. Just be completely relaxed, because that's what we're seeing. I understand that auditioning is one of the hardest things, but it's a craft in itself. There are two different things, from auditioning to getting the part. Those are two different worlds.
Yeah, I think actors quite a lot of the times can't make the distinction. Do I go off on this crazy character that's in my head and to try to be somebody I'm not, or to actually be myself and play the character? And I think it's a tough decision for actors to make.
Yeah, and especially now, because right now we're in a self-tape world. I'm always concerned when actors tape themselves, and they're taping themselves, and they're editing themselves, and they just don't, and they're like wondering why they're not getting a job or what's coming on. Like, it's hard for you guys to look at yourselves and say what a good take is. So the only thing you really need to do is always be yourself. Because if that's who they're going to go with, that's who they're going to go with. But you can't always overthink things. And I, as much as I love self-tape, believe me, it's definitely easy. Mm-hmm. And it's convenient. But by the time I'm taping someone and I see their self-tape, I already know by the time they slate or they give me their first line that that's the person.
Yep.
I love commercial casting. It's such a different world. I would be the casting director, and I've been told this, that I sit there and laugh. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to throw the actor off, but I mean, I just love watching them. I'm such a huge fan, and I couldn't be a commercial casting director because I would be laughing through the audition.
In my short acting career, I remember going into a casting session and talk about being blown away was that a casting director decided in the middle of my read to open up and start eating a sandwich. And it threw me way off. I'm like, okay, am I really on the right side of the table?
And you know what? That's what is so amazing about the audition space, is because actors, this isn't the only piece they're auditioning for. So say they have like 8 auditions.
Yep.
And then they have to switch and adjust and become that person. You know, and then they put so much into it when they come in. It's like every you flinch or you drop, you know, a cup of coffee over, then they just react. And because they're so, so sensitive, it's so, you know, like boo. And they're like, you know, they're it'll throw them off their game. So what I do, and my cat, when I used to cast, I would go into the hallway and go, how's everybody doing? Okay, whatever you're excited about or anxious about, just get rid of it right now. Because at the end of the day, just be yourself. Because I am so looking forward to seeing what you guys do in the room. I'm the one that's nervous. I'm the one that's like not nervous for them. I'm like, oh my gosh, I hope I don't throw them off because I enjoy their work so much. Like, I'm the fan. I have you on the list. I'm looking forward. Like, I'm like, oh good, 2 o'clock comes in. Here's this person from this show. I love this. You know, I love their work. Oh my gosh, I love this person's acting real. Like, oh my gosh, I want to look forward to them. So I'm on the other side. So what I tell my staff, I'm like, you guys, just don't eat, don't drink. Just let's just watch and enjoy the show because you can throw them off.
What kind of effect has the social media had on you as far as like in the casting world?
Well, you know what? As I joined social media when I was a producer, I would have loved to join, even though it says I've been joined in so many years, but I always just called myself a producer for one. I think my social media probably started around 2009, 2010. And it was like, I would have loved to have been a casting director on Instagram or Facebook to do one-on-ones. I mean, I just didn't, you know, I was already over the casting director thing. Mm-hmm. And I would have had one-on-ones and all that more than a producer. Producers are like, I don't know, what actors need to understand is even though the director is the one that comes with a casting list, like, hey, I'd like to have this person. At the end of the day, producers sign off on cast. You know, we're the ones looking around and go, oh my gosh, I have to introduce this to this director. Or like bigger budgets. Like we have this amazing project coming up right now called The Land of Beyond Belief. I cannot tell you who the big, big director is, but he's amazing. Okay. When I talk to him almost every other week, we talk and we go through cast and we go through like, hey, what about this? And they always come back to, well, what do you think? I was like, well, you know what? I think I can't say the name, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, I never thought of that. Or he'll say, what do you think of this person? I'm like, wow, that is interesting. Okay, should we approach? Okay, let's go. You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, the point producer is the main person that gets behind cast. And you know, feels confident to put a deck together, a pitch deck, and go out to financing because we sit and talk to financiers. We can say, oh, hey, we have such and such director and they're bringing this actor's attached. And that's very, very attractive. But at the end of the day, producers are like, can we get this done? Or is this our numbers going to be right in the sales world? Or can we do this? Or, you know, is Universal or Warner's, are they going to be okay with it? And chances are they'll say, well, we love this director, but this director doesn't know that this person, you know, is not, you know, valuable to us. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, it always comes back to producers, always.
Exactly. And from a producing standpoint, are you looking at the numbers of followers to, as far as like in the casting situation, saying these are potential seats?
You know what? I just had that conversation with an upcoming female casting director who I'm so excited about. It's a small film, but I'm really happy she's on it. And her and I were talking about last week. We were like, well, okay, you have somebody with 4 or 5 million followers. Okay. Now I'm not saying that's a lot, but I'm just saying here we have this person with a lot of followers. No one has seemed to say, okay, you have 5 or 6 million followers and that equals this amount of money. The only thing that's going to help the film is if you say, hey, when the film comes out, please stand behind it. So if we need pre-sales, if we need like, hey, download the movie or something, this would be great. Of course, all that matters. We want a fan base. We want a fan base because that means we're expecting those many people to watch the film. But it hasn't proven dollar-wise what it's done. The end of the day is they can be strong domestically, but what's this going to mean out in the world where, you know, sales, worldwide sales goes. So yes, it's attractive. That just means a lot of people like your work and that's a good sign, but I'm not going to say, oh, because that person doesn't have a lot of, he or she's not going to be in the film.
Right.
Absolutely not. No.
On the Magic Max, you had quite a few cameos. Is that because of distribution standpoint, or is that because you just really love the fact that they were Oscar winners?
Well, the thing with Barry Corbin is I had worked on him on Windsor, and I absolutely love Barry Corbin. He's an amazing human being. I mean, just amazing. When he put the clothes on as Grismer, because he plays Grismer, the guy that owns Magic Motors. Mm-hmm. And this is a guy who's always in cowboys. He's always in Westerns. He's good for that. So when I reached out to him and I said, could you play Grismer? Could you come play with us for a week? You know, this was an only 17-day shoot, and we have 7 days with him. And he said, absolutely. He said, send me the script. He looks at it and goes, wow, this is kind of cool. You know, he Grismer just always wrangles change in his pocket, you know, and he's, you've never seen Barry Corbin in this type of film. So the costume designer, who's Toby Bronson, who's fabulous, by the way, mm-hmm. he loved dressing Grismer character. And so when Barry Corbin got into this, he was even walking different, and he walked sort of pigeon-toed and all that. So that's what I did. I was like, well, I really like these. I love Barry Corbin. I mean, I've always been a fan. Sally Kirkland, I'm like, come on, you know, who doesn't love her?
Exactly.
And then, of course, Joe Estevez come in, and he, of course, is a friend of Brandi Turow. We're like, oh, my gosh, we love him. So, you know, Starletta was like, she's perfect. So, yeah, there was a lot of fun casting and doing little things like that, because you got to reach inside your favorites. But Barry Corbin, I mean, there's another film that's absolutely going to be it's going to blow people away with Barry Corbin. It's absolutely phenomenal.
He was amazing in Urban Cowboy. That's when I first got introduced to him as an actor.
The best set conduct I've ever seen out of a movie star. I mean, he can be on the movie star caliber. His ethics are absolutely amazing. If he has a call time at like 12, he's there at 10. And he's standing right next to the director and saying, hey, I'm checking in. Sits down, waits for his cues, and comes and just blows it away. I mean, he's just so professional. And this is why people love working with him, because he is just so, just amazing.
Any final notes you'd like to pass on to people, upcoming projects?
Well, we have, you know, the we're going to be rolling out Magic Max with Gravitas Ventures distribution. We're rolling that out on January 26, 2021. It's up for pre-order. Please pre-order Magic Max. You can go to iTunes, Magic Max, push that little button for pre-order. That is how we're going to start the year for 2021. We do have a film around the bend called Partners. It's a cowboy movie. It's more like a City Slickers. It's present day. Mm-hmm. But it is about a father, once again, who is so obsessed with cowboys, like so much where the wife's like, I'm leaving. So of course my buddy Parker Bates is coming on. He's going to produce with me.
Oh, fabulous.
Yes. He's going to produce. He asked me, some Miss Gabrielle. I love this. I want to love produce. So he's amazing where he has his cast list ready. So it's about two cowboys from the 1800s who come back as ghosts to try to help Arnie, the dad, come back and get the kids back and all that. Well, it's the dad never felt, anyway, he always dressed as a cowboy. Like his jargon is just, his verbiage is always cowboys. And what ends up happening is the kids go to this cowboy world. It's like a Jurassic Park, but it's just all cowboys. Mm-hmm. They go there and the dad performs, and you know, the kids are pretty damn proud. So he lets go the cowboy, but you've got these two ghosts of the 1800s who at the same time, you know, they rob. It's just two worlds collide. You know, they try to hold up an ATM and they hear money's that. they find a treasure that they had once buried when they were real live cowboys. And they were both shot during a bank robbery. So they get to relive that whole life. And of course, the only person that can see them is Arnie. And then of course, at the end, you know, that the kids see them as well. Really fun, great stunts. Of course, we're going to have the great Phil Town back with us.
Awesome.
And we were supposed to shoot that in November, but you know, we're on lockdown. So we're going to see what happens in the spring.
All right. And where can people find you on social media?
Social media is I'm at Gabe, G-A-B-E-V-A-N-S on Instagram, and Gabrielle Evans Fields, Gabe, G-A-B Evans Fields, sorry, on Instagram, and Gabrielle Evans Fields on Facebook. Facebook is a little bit more, you know, personal stuff. Instagram's more kind of keep it with the actors. I want every actor to, and director and cinematographer, all those people. I love to connect to them on Instagram.
Thank you for listening to The School of Hollywood. Please follow us on Instagram at School of Hollywood and subscribe so you can hear our next episode. I'm Steve Owens. Until next time, continue to follow your dreams and look to the stars for your success.